CLS is the weighing machine was created to help you, the financial advisor or investor, reach your long-term financial goals. Each episode, your hosts, Rusty Vanneman and I, Robin Murray, cut through the market clamor to find the time-tested principles that help investors succeed.
CLS is the weighing machine is inspired by two ideas. The first is the classic investing truism attributed to Benjamin Graham, that the stock market is a voting machine in the short run and a weighing machine in the long run. In other words, emotion drives short-term market movement, but fundamentals and valuations drive returns over time. The second idea is CLS's investment methodology of risk budgeting. Represented by the scales, risk budgeting measures and manages risk to suit the needs of each investor.
Welcome to CLS's The Weighing Machine.
We hope you enjoy it. And as always, please let us know what you think.
On the podcast today, volatility finally made an appearance. We'll look back at the first market slide we've seen in a while. We'll also get some notes from the CLS forum and check in with CLS's Brian Regal.
We'll also review the U.S. dollar, emerging markets, and our lessons from 2017 with our guest, CLS Client Portfolio Manager, Case Eichenberger. Welcome to CLS's The Weighing Machine. I'm Rusty Vanneman.
And I'm Robin Murray, calling in from rainy, chilly England today. So sorry if I sound a little far away. Let's begin, as you always do, with a look at the markets. You've got 1 month in the books for 2018. How did we do?
Well, hello, Robin. I hope you're staying dry over in England, and we do miss you here in the studio today. I'm sure you're having a bit more fun, though. First of all, we're talking about the month just after an exceptional week. Last week was our first down week. It snapped a four-week winning streak. It's like our biggest correction in a couple years. 10-year Treasury yields hit their highest level in years. The dollar broke down to its lowest level in years. So you have all this exciting news. But you know what? We're still having a pretty good year because January was so strong. And just looking at some of the numbers in January, again, just a great month. The overall U.S. market was up over 5%. When you look at international stocks, they're almost up 6%. Emerging markets were up over 8%. I mean, just crazy good numbers. The bond market was down about 1%. Again, for the bond market, it was its worst month in a few years. And commodities were up. So if you just put it all together, great month for globally diversified portfolios. CLS portfolios had a great month, both in absolute and relative terms. Again, our international exposure helped us tremendously, and the fixed income didn't help so much. But just really a great start to the year.
All right, great. Well, it has been a while since we saw a slide in the market. So what was behind it?
Great question. And everybody always wants to know the answers. I think there's the common story, which I think there's some truth to it. But then I'll get to, I think, what the real reason was. And the official reason or the common narrative why we had losses last week were because interest rates are moving higher, because there's more concern about inflation. And there's a couple good reasons to be concerned about inflation. The dollar just had its worst year in years, and it's down so far this year. That's inflationary because it costs more money to buy imported goods. The tax reform, which is pro-cyclical and should help the economy in the short term, is coming at a time when the economy was already showing strength. I mean, we're already looking at potential estimates for GDP growth to be over 5% in the first quarter. So the economy's strong, and we're just throwing more lighter fluid on an economy that's already strong. So I think there are reasons why people are concerned about inflation and why interest rates are rising higher. But you know what? I think the real reason why the market turned around, because it was just due. I know that's not probably unsatisfying to some people, but if you think about it, inflation expectations and interest rates have been rising for weeks. And it was just last week that it finally turned over. I think a lot of it is just, you know, in the short term, the market's a weighing, is a voting machine. You know, long term, it's a weighing machine, but short term, it's a voting machine. And it's really about sentiment. And we sort of reached a peak in sort of this enthusiasm for the market a couple weeks ago, which often precedes intermediate tops in the market. So anyway, market volatility is normal. We have not seen a 3% correction in years when we usually have 7 of them a per year. So anyway, it's just normal behavior. We just haven't seen it in a while.
All right. Well, where do we go from here then?
Great question. I think there is some great stats in that we have received. Basically, what happens when you have a week like this is the market is usually kind of choppy short term, like over the next week or so. But believe it or not, like is usually the case with the stock market, you see positive returns over the next 3, 6, and 12 months. I mean, it's the market has a strong positive expectation even after you have sort of a little rollover in the market. I think that the outlook for stocks and bonds really remains the same, what we've had in a long time. With valuations higher for the U.S. and interest rates low for bonds, I think you have to expect below average, though positive returns for the U.S. market. Again, we're still more optimistic on international markets. But I think the real interesting thing is, you know, we have been talking about real assets, such as commodities or real estate. These tend to have a positive correlation with inflation and inflation expectations. So we do have that exposure. We've been adding to it in recent weeks. It's been helping the portfolios so far. And we will probably continue to look at real assets to diversify portfolios. Again, the important thing to remember is like traditional stocks and bonds have a negative correlation with inflation, meaning if inflation is rising or inflation expectations are rising, then stocks and bonds tend to have subpar performance. So anyway, That's kind of the outlook right now for the markets.
Okay, great. Well, let's turn to what has long been a hot topic at CLS and one that's becoming hotter in the rest of the investment world, ETFs, the wave that keeps on growing.
Absolutely. You know, I keep talking about a tidal wave, and I might have to come up with a different term because it's bigger than that. And the explosion in ETFs is just really remarkable. We've written about it. Last year was the best year ever for flows into ETFs ever, and it was even better than any year for mutual funds. And just think about that for a moment. Mutual funds, one of the greatest financial innovations of all time. They've been around for decades, and they never had a better year than ETFs had last year. That is incredible. But here is like a cherry on top. Maybe it's more like a watermelon on top or something. It's so big. But in January of this year, flows in ETFs with like a week to go, it was the best month for ETF flows ever. And if you annualize what ended up being, so January was just an incredible month. But if you annualize the inflows into ETFs in January, we will be 70% higher than even last year. So it's a massive tidal wave. And, you know, that's a wave that we're on here at CLS. It's great. We were just at Inside ETFs last week and down in Florida. It's a conference. And one thing that's really interesting is attendance is, I mean, it's always a well-attended conference and a really well-run conference, but it was more popular than ever. Highest attendance, most speakers. And the ETF providers that are coming into the industry, the resources and the talent that are coming in, you're going to just see a lot more innovation, a lot more resources poured into the space. So it's just a really exciting time in the ETF industry.
So another big event last week was CLS's investment committee meeting, which is held quarterly and includes the CLS forum. And we typically have some great speakers on the forum. Last week, we hosted Sal Gilberti from Tucrim ETFs and Brent Ledbetter from Research Affiliates. What did we learn?
Yeah, another great CLS forum. And both of those speakers, you know, we're very knowledgeable, and we had great discussions about it. First of all, with Sal Gilberti, and he's been in the industry for about 4 decades, and he's done a lot of stuff. He's really been in the commodity space. He's been a trader. His specialty is agricultural commodities. And what's so intriguing about this is, you know, we talk about how the stock and bond markets, when you look at their total return indexes, are basically at all-time highs or near all-time highs. One of the only true bargains left are commodities, which as an index, still down about 60%, but it's really the agricultural commodities, and we're talking like corn, wheat, soybeans, and sugar. This could be one of the only true bargains left. And Sal's point was that these prices are trading at the cost of production, so supply and demand is basically in balance. It also means that prices are not likely to fall much farther. And so what is a catalyst for prices to move higher? He doesn't know. It could be dead money for a while, but the point is that if it does move higher, agricultural prices tend to explode higher. So it's kind of the risk-reward trade-off is very attractive. But obviously the key to commodities, again, is, as I mentioned earlier, sort of that hedge with inflation. And also they're just such a power to a diversifier to traditional stock and bond portfolios. Now, as for Brent from Research Affiliates, they're out in Newport Beach, California. They do a lot of great work, a lot of great research. And Brent was fantastic. And basically, this was really talking about our smart beta theme, and Research Affiliates has done a ton of work in this space. And a lot of takeaways from this, and we both have recorded Sal and Brent, so we'll probably use those interviews in future Weighing Machine podcasts. But the one thing that Brent was talking about, that even in sort of smart beta world, one of the biggest problems with investors, whether they're individual investors or institutional investors, is chasing returns. So, you know, we always talk about how chasing performance is the biggest weakness of really so many people investing. And that is simply the case in factors as well. He talked about relative valuations, which, of course, we love to use here at CLS Investments. So a lot of great data there. And if anything was intriguing, and I know we got Case come up in a moment too, but one of the areas he talked about was emerging markets. And despite the fact that emerging markets were up 40% last year, he talked about some really interesting areas within the emerging market space. And so we think that it's still a great opportunity. So again, it was a great CLS forum.
All right, great. Well, let's turn now to our guest for this week, who is CLS Client Portfolio Manager, Case Eichenberger. Thanks for coming on the show, Case.
Thanks, guys.
All right, well, you wrote about the U.S. dollar in your weekly last week. It's continuing a slide. Why should we be watching the dollar?
So the dollar is something I always like to talk about because I think it's something that us in the U.S. don't really pay too much attention to, especially for us global investors as we're looking to invest in U.S. or in companies that are domiciled overseas. So the dollar has been historically strong for the last 5 or 6 years, and like everything else, it's cyclical. So we have actually a pretty cool chart in our reference guide that points out when the U.S. dollar is strong, U.S. equities do good, overseas equities hurt. But when the dollar is starting to weaken or is weak, U.S. equities still do pretty well, but overseas equities tend up doing even better. And what does best is emerging markets. So, you know, what I wanted to at least point out is that the U.S. dollar has been on a decline since it hit a top there at the end of 2016 and is down roughly 13-14%. So last year was really, you know, we talked a lot about the reemergence of investing overseas. A lot of that had to do with the U.S. dollar, I think, weakening. Even if you just look at some of the other developed markets overseas, they had really good years, but the tailwind that really helped them push them above what the U.S. market did was the declining dollar. So what that means is U.S. dollar declines, their currencies overseas that we also invest in when we buy their markets, like the euro, like the yen, has been increasing. So I think it's just important to note that the dollar is cyclical like everything else.
You know, I want to jump in on something here, Case. I thought this was a great topic and an important topic, so I'm glad you wrote about it. You know, one thing that's really interesting about the dollar is, and you write about it, it's overvalued still.
Yeah.
And it's pretty remarkable despite the losses last year. And you know what is also really interesting about the dollar is last year, in the U.S., the Federal Reserve was increasing short-term rates.
Right.
A lot of people say that should improve the dollar, and all else being equal, it should. But you know what? The dollar went down.
Yeah.
It went down a lot. So you think about it, markets that go down despite good news, they just want to get weaker.
Right. There's just a lot of different dynamics, right? It's not typical, if this happens, then this will happen no matter what. So, I mean, you just can't always count on one narrative to come true. There's just so many other dynamics. You know, and a lot of it has to do with we've had really good growth here in the U.S. You know, overseas, we're starting to see a lot better growth. They're finally catching up to probably where we're at right now. And that helps their currencies. You know, that gives a better outlook on investing in their currency still.
And given our overweight to international stocks and the
yes.
fact that they're unhedged.
Right.
You know, so hopefully.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the other thing is you know, with we talked a lot about ETFs, and there's always, you know, some new invention out there. You can hedge out the currency risk. Obviously, we are not hedging it out as much as our competitors are when we look at our stats. So that's definitely helped us.
All right. Well, Case, you also wrote about emerging markets, which obviously we've talked a lot about here on CLS as the weighing machine. You write, some investors are worrying about whether it's time to trim positions in EM. What do you think?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a weekly or a podcast or a monthly if we didn't talk about some sort of emerging markets. I mean, it's something that we talk about ad nauseum to probably some extent, but you know, it is such a big tilt for us. We at least want to give a lot of different perspectives on it. And myself, I do a lot of client visits, client calls, due diligence requests. And a lot of the questions I get, you know, emerging markets had such a great 2017, up 35%. Specific countries like China up over 50%. They're worried. You know, they're worried when you have that quick of gains and that strong of gains, what will happen? And I think the other part that I get questions on is, hey, this whole market seems overvalued. What if we get a type of correction, maybe 20, 30% down? Will emerging markets get hit, you know, just like they did in 08? And I think people just look back to the most recent crash or bear market and assume that's what's going to happen going forward. And, you know, everything's a little bit different. It happens a little bit differently. So really what I just wanted to point out is back in 08, when emerging markets did get hit minus 50%, They were expensive. They were expensive relative to the U.S. So right now they're cheap, where the U.S. is expensive. So you can't discount the fact that valuations do play a big part of what happens when corrections happen.
You know, I just got to jump in again on this. I thought that part of your weekly three was brilliant. And, you know, we do get that question so often, like if the market goes down,
yeah,
international stocks are going to fall more and emerging markets are going to fall even more because they're high beta. That is totally not the case.
Right,
and you show all this data for it. I mean, it is really powerful. And it's like we should almost like put that in all our weekly threes for a while.
Yeah, I agree. And to kind of come back on that, we just updated the Y International white paper and added some more charts in there. And Kosha Edis does a great job with that. And
He killed it on that. He did so much great work.
He has something new. I think it was something what you're talking about, Rusty, is when U.S. markets down, international markets are only down maybe 60% of the time. And actually, when the U.S. market is down, international markets are positive 30% of the time. I may have those a little bit off, but at least the point there is that don't always assume when the U.S. falls that international markets are going to fall.
I bet further. If we quizzed a lot of people, not just individual investors, but professional investors,
yeah,
and quizzed them on that data, I bet most people would get it wrong.
I agree. We're just looking at what happened in 08, right, and some of the bad years EM had. So
fighting the last war.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't extrapolate what happened in the past to the future too much.
All right, well, your final section was a look back at 2017, some of the lessons we learned there. Run us through your top three.
Yeah, I wanted to get at least three out. I tried to get five, but I think these three were some of the biggest ones that, again, I noticed when working with clients and talking and really doing a message out there. And first of all, diversification works eventually. There's always going to be some part of your portfolio that is not doing as good as others. But what we've noticed in the last 7 years is international diversification has not worked. People have been wondering why it should be part of their portfolios. So, you know, you just have to maintain conviction, maintain discipline, and your diversification will work. And last year, international markets definitely helped, you know, with diversification of a globally diversified portfolio, which we do here at CLS. Second, I think, is always the other side of the tail. Everybody gets worried about bonds, especially when the Federal Reserve starts to raise rates and do rate hikes. But that doesn't typically, you know, that doesn't always mean the U.S. bond market is going to do bad. So, and that's what happened last year. I think we raised rates, what, three times, kind of what we expected. Short-term interest rates definitely moved higher. Long-term rates actually probably moved down a little bit. So you still got positive returns from the bond market last year of 3.5%. And again, diversified portfolios should have something in bonds, so it was still good there. So bonds have a tougher year this year, but you know, we're just getting started. And then third was really, I think it was kind of interesting. We had a very low volatile landscape in 2017, but for the markets, but politically around the world, it was not it was definitely volatile. It was not calm. So you had a lot of things going on with North Korea and other whereabouts in the world here. But overall, it was one of the lowest years for stock market volatility. I think it was like 6% for the U.S. stock market was a standard deviation, which is almost typically what bonds are for the year. So it was just interesting to note that just because what you see on the news channels does not equate to the narratives and how the stock market plays out.
Hey, you know, I got a question for you, Case. So you've been on the road a lot lately. You've been talking to a lot of advisors,
yeah,
and a lot of investors. And what do you think their mood is right now?
Cautiously optimistic. I don't know. We
Isn't
always
that
say
amazing?
That.
Everybody says everybody's so bullish, I but think exactly my experience
exactly.
too.
You hear a lot of bullish sentiment out there, but And we looked at it. When we do our, we can see who's changing risk budgets here at CLS. And it really was kind of mixed last year. So all in all, I think a lot of clients are getting nervous. They want to protect what they had last year because last year was just so great. And they're just nervous that this year could be a lot worse. And they're trying to pick and choose. And my advice always is, hey, you can't time the market one way or the other. So typically, maybe retake your questionnaire, figure out what your risk budget should be. Use the advice from your financial professional, of course, as well. But don't make any rash decisions based on just what happened last calendar year. You know, calendar years don't really matter.
Classic advice.
Yeah.
Good advice. Absolutely.
Well, thanks, Kate. Great insight as always. Thanks for coming on the show. Let's turn now to our final portion of the podcast, which is the Q&A. Rusty, what do we have this week?
Well, speaking of advice and wisdom, we did an interview with one of the senior wholesalers here at CLS Investments a few weeks ago, Brian Regal, who covers Texas and Louisiana and a few other states down south. And he's been in the industry for decades, fantastic touch with clients and advisors. He's been through a lot of cycles. And I think the interview will have a lot of words of wisdom, whether you're an advisor, investor, you're a wholesaler, just really anybody who's involved in the financial market. So I think it's a great interview.
Okay, that sounds great. Let's have a listen.
Well, good morning, Brian Regal, and welcome to The Wang Machine.
Good morning, Rusty. Nice to be here, as always.
This is going to be a fun interview. I got a whole bunch of questions.
All right.
Mostly philosophical stuff. But
uh-oh.
But first of all, Brian Regal, tell us who you are. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Rusty, I'm a native of Texas.
Yeah.
Born and raised out in a little town called Graham, Texas, which is about 9,000 people. Had a great childhood, great upbringing. Went on to Baylor University, thinking I would never see Graham again. You know, when you reach high school age, you never want to see that little town.
Yeah.
You're done with it. And of course, when I went back and reevaluated after being in the city off and on for 30 years, it didn't end up being such a bad place. And so my wife
I'm from a small town, too. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, my wife and I escaped the city about 9 years ago and built a house out in the middle of the country, and we actually love it out there.
Yeah.
But anyway, I graduated from Baylor, was in the financial industry, was in the savings and loan business for a number of years till it disappeared on me.
Yeah.
And after that, it seemed like a natural thing to do, to go into the financial services business, which I did back in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And had my own practice for a while, ended up selling that practice to my partner. And after having used CLS in the practice, they actually called me because they had an opening in a wholesaler position. That was, almost 20 years ago.
I was going to say, what year was that again?
It was probably 99, so 17, 18 years ago, yeah. Something like that. And
yeah.
Here I am.
Hey, how many states do you cover again?
I cover Texas and the surrounding states, which is 5.
Yeah.
It's a lot of ground.
So you've been doing this for a while. What do you think are the qualities or attributes of a great wholesaler?
I think primarily it's really knowing the advisor's business and being able to empathize and understand the real problems they face. And, of course, provide solutions. And beyond that, I think one of the big keys is being really responsive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, advisors, when they need something, they need it, and they need it now. They don't need it 2 or 3 days from now. They need it as quickly as they can get it. And just being responsive and establishing that trust relationship, I think, is huge.
Yeah. So what do you do to get better at what you do, either personally or professionally? What are some of the things you do to get better?
You know, I think it's a combination of things. I think every single day I try to stay open to new ideas. I think so many of us kind of get stuck in our old ways. It's hard for us to change, and I really try to make sure that I fight that on an ongoing basis and stay open. Other than that, I think what's really important is obviously staying in good physical condition as best you can, and eating right. Those are big mantras of mine, as you know.
Mm-hmm. I know it. I believe, me healthy when I'm on the road with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I think if our health is to be, it's kind of up to me,
yeah,
and up to us to try to do the best we can. But that's an important part of it.
I still remember how bad you made me feel drinking that Coca-Cola on that last trip.
Well, at least you don't drink Mountain Dew.
I mean. That's true. That's true. The official drink of CLS, almost.
Almost. But anyway, I think it's a combination of things, and that also includes the spiritual side of things. I think it's very important to really feed that side of yourself every single day.
Right. That's great stuff. Any mentors, any particular mentors in your career?
You know, lots of mentors going back to when I was in grade school. You know, we all have teachers,
yeah,
probably no more than 2 or 3 that really had a big impact. And There were just a couple of them that had great impacts on self-confidence, encouragement, and those kinds of things. And then, you know, as you get older, it's those folks that come into your life that really take the time to develop deeper relationships, where they say all of us have about a handful of really close people.
Yeah.
And those people are people that you can trust with anything. You can talk about anything. You can really sharpen yourselves on each other. What does Proverbs say? You know, as one man sharpens another. It's an important concept, I think, that we all need to be open and looking for when it comes to those mentors that mean that really help us grow to the next level.
And just a quick question. What about books? Are there any key books that somebody has given you that's had a big impact in your life? And kind of related to that, is there a book or books that you've given out as gifts, particular titles?
You know, there was a book that was put out a long time ago. It's really more of a little coffee table book and I wish I'd have studied this question before we sat down, and I could have had a little list of things for you. The challenge now is remembering them all.
Do you know what? I can always put it in later.
There you go.
Yep, that's
so
right.
So think about that.
The advantage of a podcast.
I've got, you know, there's just a lot of them that have had great impacts on my life. But this particular book was written by an actual stockbroker. And it was about the customer relationship and about trust and about being the right kind of person. And I think all of us, those of us certainly that are in the sales side of things, we try to do this and feed our minds with positive things on an ongoing basis. And so I think the times when I've grown the most have been the times when I've read books that focused on maintaining a positive attitude. I've listened to a lot of tapes. I listen to a lot of audio books now because I do a lot of traveling.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's all kinds of authors out there like Brian Tracy and people like Brian that really inspire and have written dozens upon dozens of books about maintaining the right attitude, you know, keeping your mind like a garden, getting rid of the weeds and growing the things that are important.
Love it. Let's change gears a little bit.
Sure.
Let's kind of move to, in your opinion, what do you think makes a great investment firm, an investment management firm?
I think what makes a great investment management firm in this day and time is a firm that has a real discipline that they can believe in and that they can transfer to it ultimately to the investment client that would understand what it is they believe in and how they implement that belief. We see a lot of presentations today. Clients are inundated with information, as you know, that about this discipline or that discipline, and then the discipline kind of gets lost sometimes in the charts and the graphs, and the client ends up with what I call the lizard look. You know, their eyes kind of roll back in their heads. But I think it's maintaining. Even though it's oftentimes complicated to deliver that discipline from our perspective and your perspective particularly, but being able to communicate that discipline in a simple way that the client gets it, understands it, and buys into it are critical, because that's where we help defend the client against that behavior gap.
I love it. You know what? You just gave me a title for a new article down the road, The Lizard Look. I've heard you say it before. I don't know why I've not brought it up in a writing. So kind of related to that, I mean, you've been talking about CLS investments for a long time. I mean, what makes CLS investments risk budgeting, our methodology, our philosophy, so special, in your opinion?
I think the key to risk budgeting is, again, I go back to the simplicity. It's such an easy story to tell, and yet the delivery of it in clients' portfolios has proven year in and year out in all kinds of markets that it works. I mean, you have to have ultimately something that works. I mean, we all live and die, right, by our ability to make sure the client reaches their objective.
Yeah.
That being said, that's why risk budgeting, I think, is so powerful, is because it really maintains that discipline of making sure the client stays diversified, and yet it also maintains that diversification doesn't necessarily mean passive diversification. It means really actively making sure that we're making judgment calls in that portfolio that are going to add value.
Oh, man, you know, whenever I'm with you, it's like I write about this stuff and speak to this stuff all the time, and you always say it better.
No, that's not true.
You always say it better.
That's not true.
Okay, here's another fun question. So you have dealt with thousands of financial advisors in your career. What do you think the attributes and practices of a great financial advisor or financial counselor?
Well, that is a great question. The financial advisor community is made up of all different kinds of personalities. Mm-hmm. So it's really never a certain personality. First and foremost, I think the successful advisor is one that has truly the heart of a servant. And serving his clients means making sure that everything he does from a fiduciary capacity is the right thing for the client. It's so tempting with all the different financial tools and instruments there are out there to really have the revenue of your practice drive so much of what you do in those relationships. And I see a lot of advisors falling into the trap of, you know, believing what they want to believe instead of really believing what is right for the client. And the really truly successful ones are the ones that keep that client interest in at the forefront of their mind all the time. And that drives what really gets them up in the morning. That's what they love to do, mm-hmm. is help that investor achieve their goals and do the right thing.
Mm, right on. All right. So in recent conversations, when you're talking to advisors, what are their biggest issues and concerns right now?
Well, obviously, one of the concerns is where are we in the market? You know, that's the ongoing concern, no matter what market we have. And we've had such a great run in the markets that I think everyone is just kind of waiting for the other shoe to fall.
Yeah.
And so that's always a continuing kind of a concern right now amongst a lot of advisors. But also, I think there's a real concern amongst the advisory community that changes in the regulatory climate have caused the public, you know, to really question what they do. And so I think they're very sensitive in a justified way that they've been doing what's right for the customer for a long, long time. And it's really kind of aggravating when the government decides to implement policies that call that into question, because then you have the media get involved, and then you've got both sides of so the client base really sees that, and so it's challenging to them to make sure that their clients understand that they have been fiduciaries for many, many years and that nothing has really changed in that regard.
Right. Do you think there's one thing, if you could say there's one thing that investors need the most help with? Is there any single thing? Or
I think really investors need help more than anything else in really helping to control their behavior. Mm-hmm. Getting fed good, unbiased information that they can count on, that's not emotionally charged, so that they can really stay on the same page with their original financial plan that their financial advisor put them in. That clearly is probably one of the biggest challenges. And so an investment firm that can communicate that in a good way on a very regular basis, so that client can start relying on that information as being unbiased, mm-hmm. I think is one of the keys.
I agree. All right. So, what would you recommend to some person who right now might be considering entering the financial industry? Any words of wisdom?
Certainly, I think the person that's entering in our business, it's more incumbent today than ever before that they look for that mentor or mentors that we talked about earlier. Years and years ago, we saw advisors all the time just jump in, get their license, go sell things. That's not the way our business is today by any stretch of the imagination. So it's important that they get the right type of tutelage from a senior advisor that helps them understand what the most important issues are facing their investment clients today. And so sometimes that requires them kind of swallowing their pride a little bit, mm-hmm. realizing they really need to go into this as an apprenticeship first, and then they can decide when the right time is to go out on their own or perhaps become a successor to a successful advisor that's out there already.
Yeah, good stuff. I've got two more questions.
Okay.
They're kind of bringing it back on you now.
Okay.
Okay, first of all, what accomplishments are you most proud of, either personally or professionally? Actually, I want both, because obviously you're going to have them in both areas.
Well, I think, of course, as a father and now a grandfather, you know, certainly my greatest accomplishments are my children. I'm equally proud of both of them. They've both gone on to, Peggy and I have two sons, and they're now fathers of their own, and they have created successful career paths for themselves. I've seen them go through some troubled times and really come out on the other side a better person. And that, you know, from my perspective, when I look at what happened in my life, from a personal growth standpoint, you know, I mentioned the fact that I was in the godforsaken savings and loan business for a number of years, and we all know how badly that ended. But when you can really take a trip into humble pie, so to speak, and get knocked down, really, really knocked down, and then make the right choices to recover. You know, with God's help, I think that's one of the things that I regard as my greatest accomplishment, is having gone down as far as you can go financially and then turn that around eventually and become successful.
Wow. Fantastic. Okay, fun stuff here. Outside of work and family, what do you do for fun? How do you keep yourself busy?
Well, I told you I have a farm.
Yeah.
Peggy and I have a farm together, and she works every bit as hard as I do. So there's not a whole lot of TV watching in our house, especially on the weekends. That's our time to kind of catch up and do the chores and all the things that we do to run a little farm. And so that's really been very gratifying. It's something that's really taken up a lot of our time the last, you know, 8 or 9 years. We've loved every minute of it. And other than that, I play golf when I can and enjoy my children and my grandchildren when I can. And I'm active in the church. And those things are really what's important and how my life goes these days. I'm very pleased with where we are and where we've been, what we've been able to accomplish, you know, after having worked with CLS for a number of years. It's been a company that's been very good to me and my family.
Great. Well, Brian, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Rusty.
And you know what? Next time you're in Omaha, I think you're going to do the podcast again.
Hey, I'm ready.
All right, great.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks again.
Okay, great stuff. Always nice to listen to Brian. That'll do it for this week. I will sign out from jolly old England. Rusty, do you want to leave us with a final word?
Yeah, I have some words. First of all, Robin, stay dry. You know, I know it's difficult to do when you're in England. I think they have, five sunny days a year?
They do, and I don't think any of them are happening in the next 3 weeks.
And then, of course, for everybody else, stay balanced.
All right. Okay, we will be back in a couple of weeks. I might still be here in England. We'll see. Thanks for listening to CLS is the Weighing Machine, and thank you for your time and trust in CLS Investments.
CLS is the Weighing Machine is hosted by Rusty Vanneman, Chief Investment Officer at CLS Investments, and me, Robin Murray, freelance writer and editor. It's produced by Nick Harnack with help from the marketing team in Omaha, Nebraska. If you have questions or feedback about our podcast today, please send us a note at rusty.vanneman@clsinvest.com.